KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. I'm Sam Bowman. A humanitarian crisis of huge proportions is gripping parts of Central Africa and the Middle East. Conflicts and climate are combining to put 20 million people at risk of starvation in South Sudan, Somalia, northeastern Nigeria, and Yemen, according to the UN, which calls the crisis the largest it has faced since it was founded after World War II. In order to prevent the use of famine declarations for political leverage, the UN has a strict threshold for designating a crisis as such: 20% of households facing extreme food shortages, acute malnutrition rates exceeding 30% of the population, and 2 out of every 10,000 people dying of hunger daily are the official markers of a famine. Of the 4 countries I just mentioned, only South Sudan has had a famine declared, and that in February of this year. And that's after more than 3 years of a brutal civil war and rapidly escalating food insecurity, combined with other crises in education, finance, and health.
Unfortunately, I've never seen anything more saddening, more complex, and more rapidly deteriorating than South Sudan.
That was Deepmala Mahla, the South Sudan country director with Mercy Corps, a nonprofit aid organization based here in Portland. Dr. Mahla has a decade and a half of experience in aid work in countries as diverse as Yemen, Ethiopia, and Indonesia, and has been based in the South Sudanese capital, Juba, since 2015. Mercy Corps has had a presence in the area since 1985, when it was still part of Sudan. South Sudan peacefully split from Sudan in the summer of 2011 after decades of civil war that formally ended in 2005.
South Sudan felt it as independence, and there was huge celebration. People were so happy and hopeful for the future, and it was one of the most beautiful moments for that country because they had struggled for it, and the celebrations went on for days and weeks.
However, within 2 years, a power struggle developed between the president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, and his vice president, Riek Machar, who come from the Dinka and Nuer ethnic groups, respectively.
13th of December 2013, the fighting, conflict, civil war started, and it's only getting worse. It probably started as a power struggle, but it's much more beyond and complicated than an ethnic power struggle, because there are not only the government and the opposition, then there are several other armed groups, and then there are splits within the groups and factions, and then there is hyperinflation. The economic crisis is massive. Government employees, including soldiers and teachers, have not been paid for months. It's the highest inflation rate in the world. They say it is some 800% inflation, whatever that means. So it's very complicated.
Dr. Mahla is in town this week to help plan Mercy Corps' aid delivery systems and raise awareness about the crisis in South Sudan. I spoke to her this afternoon about what it is like to do aid work in the country.
The hunger situation is drastic, and it is unprecedented across all periods in history ever. Half of the country does not know where their next meal is coming from. That's serious. And most of the people who are suffering are women and children. In the country, as of now, 100,000 people are starving. So starvation in terms of food security levels is extreme. I mean, I hate to say it, but you are near death. That's 100,000 people. And then 1 million of them are at the risk of starving. And the deterioration happens pretty quickly. So we don't have a whole lot of time left. What Mercy Corps likes to do is also try to make an effort to leave people with a safety net. For example, when we are doing food delivery, we also give people, say, seeds and tools so that they can plant, if not a longer-term crop like maize, at least vegetables, because the cycle is shorter. You can reap the vegetables faster. So then our efforts are compounded.
To give our listeners some perspective, South Sudan is roughly about 1.5 times the size of California. So it's a huge country. Aside from the political situation, what are some of the geographic and climate problems that you have to overcome in order to just reach people?
Reaching people, what you've said, Sam, is key. Like, reaching people is so difficult. I've never seen more difficult logistics anywhere. So the country, as you said, or let's say it's the size of France, and the whole country has only 60 miles of paved road only. So you may be flying on an airplane or a chopper and you look out of the window and you've flown for 2 hours and you haven't seen a road. So that makes it so difficult to reach people. And then in the rainy season, more than half of the country, more than three quarters, I would say, you can't reach because of the rainy season. So most parts of the country we can access only by air, just imagine. And in rainy season, those airstrips, I mean, the name is airstrips, but they don't qualify to be airstrips. So we can only go there by chopper. Choppers are small. So sometimes aid delivery, which might be food or it might be cement to construct a latrine or it might be bag of nails or any other construction material for schools, the only way to reach it is through a chopper. So it not only takes time, but it also is very expensive.
From what sources do you get the majority of the funding and support for this aid?
I mean, what we get and what we have is less than what is required,
yeah.
And aid is precious. Our major support comes from the U.S. government, from the U.K. government, and donors. And also, at times, we feel that the contributions which we get from individuals and families, it is lesser, it is smaller in terms of amount, but it is so much more precious because it is not restricted that it can be done only to do this. So it's more flexible and it makes delivering aid and saving lives much more easier.
What needs to happen for there to be a proper response to this crisis that could actually...
The response plan, which has been developed for 2017, led by the UN and many other international agencies like Mercy Corps, the requirement is $1.4 billion. So this is the appeal at the global level,
yeah.
And as of now, it is funded only about a quarter. And you know, rainy season is very near in South Sudan, sometimes May early showers. And something has to be done before the rain happens, because once the rainy season happens, there is no possibility or chance left to plant any food.
And can you talk briefly about the refugee situation that's unfolding there now? I know today the UN released a press release saying that about 2 million just children are either internally or externally displaced right now.
It's very sad. And not only displaced, but many of the families and children, women who we work with, they have been displaced multiple times. Like in last 3-4 years, they have been displaced many, many times. The number of people displaced within the country and then the number of people who have been displaced and they left the country, 1.6 million refugees have left South Sudan, and majority of them are in Uganda. Some of them also go to Kenya, Car, Ethiopia, and that number is increasing. This is the largest refugee movement in Africa. And in the country, there are at least 1.9 million people who have been displaced. And when people are displaced, many of them have been displaced because of fighting, because of looting, burning of homes, burning of crops, burning of villages. So people run and flee with what? Nothing. Only their children on their backs. So which means that they have very less options left to rebuild their lives. And sometimes, or often, they run deep into the swamps, deeper and deeper, because they think they'll be safe there. And in turn, it's more difficult for us to reach them in those locations.
Have you gotten any sort of help or even a vote of confidence from the government of South Sudan, the government of Salva Kiir?
We would like to see action and... The promises which are made, those need to be fulfilled. We hear the right language many times, but we are waiting for action. And Mercy Corps, like other agencies, feels very strongly about the fact that South Sudan is the most dangerous country for aid workers across the world. 83 aid workers have been killed since December 2013. 83?
Wow.
They were on duty. What were they doing? Helping people? Or going to help when everybody else has turned their backs away.
Is the opposition invested at all in any sort of aid work, or is it pretty much all fighting?
Yeah, I mean, let's say everybody is fighting for sure, and until the guns fall silent, Mercy Corps or anybody will not be able to do anything. I often feel that we are mopping the floor while the tap is on. But I have to say, this opposition and this government, they were together. They fought together to be independent. Mm-hmm. And our strength is that we have very strong relationships at the community. The community people, village elders, religious elders, because we live there, and majority of our staff, over 90%, are South Sudanese. It's not a bunch of expats who are doing something in another country. Yeah, yeah. So local level relationships are very strong. So on the ground level, often Mercy Corps is privileged to get good support from government authorities or opposition authorities, whoever is in charge. Because in that area, they are not opposition, they are the government there. So local level, we get very good support. We often get problems as well. Sometimes our facilities are looted. Everything is gone. I have to say, one day at a time, every day is a struggle.
If people listening to this right now, if they wanted to help out, what is the best way that they could do that?
We definitely could do with a lot of help. And whatever we are trying to achieve is a Herculean task, and the crisis is getting deeper. Operating in South Sudan is tremendously expensive. And I have to say, for somebody who doesn't live and work there, it's unfathomable. Like, for example, kids are the future of any nation. One out of three kids is out of school. So, say Mercy Corps decides to bring education to people, what should we do? Let us rehabilitate the school or maybe build a temporary school. The local markets have been burnt. There's nothing there. So what do we need? Basic thatch, which we can find there, ropes, nails, iron sheets, cement. It has to go from Juba on a charter plane or choppers. So financial contributions really matter, and they really help. That's the biggest support which we need, and this is very urgent. South Sudan situation has never been more dire or urgent. The other support is help us to keep reminding the world not to forget South Sudan. It is not a forgotten crisis. Let us not make it a forgotten crisis. They are people, they are human beings, and they look at the outside world and countries which are better off for support.
And speaking of the people of South Sudan, just people caught in the middle of this conflict who have, you know, not been able to leave the country, how are people dealing with it that you have met? What are people eating? What does a community look like there?
South Sudanese are the most resilient people who we could ever come across. They have been in this crisis for ages and ages. They are so resilient and so proactive in finding ways to survive. But their coping mechanisms are exhausting. They are exhausting because the situation is so dire. We have met so many people and we work with many of them. People have survived for months eating just water lilies. There are parts of the country where people eat leaves. And we have recently expanded into a newer area because the need is higher. I was shocked to see what people are eating. A woman in on a tiny, modest pot, she was boiling coconut skin and salt and water.
The husky outer part,
which looks like jute, that with water and salt. Wow. And she was stirring it and boiling it, and that was the food for the family of 10. In parts where we work, Mercy Corps staff has met people where kids are not coming to school because they have been sent by the families to find rodents and mice which they can eat. It's much dire, and what hunger can make a human being do, it's saddening. It's very saddening. Nature has given this country everything. It's beautiful. The Nile runs across the country. There's water. You put anything, you put any seed in South Sudan, it comes out. You don't need pesticides, fertilizers generally. There are bees. There can be beautiful honey. The mangoes in South Sudan last month, mango season, it was everywhere. Honey from South Sudan, mango marmalade from South Sudan can be in the supermarkets in Portland. And I'm sure our community would love and enjoy it because the quality is so good. If only there was peace.
I've been speaking with Deep Mala Mala. She is the country director for South Sudan with Mercy Corps. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. A very big thank you to Portland community for their support, which has been with us always. It motivates us tremendously.